All right, Zabal said, good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Nun Hey. We're going to pick up from the bottom of Nun Dalid Amud Beis at the two dots. So remember again, the Mishnah introduced us to the idea of Ksuva and Tosefis Ksuva. The idea that again, there is an Iker Ksuva of 200 zuz, 100 zuz, depending on the status of the woman. But of course, the Mishnah also introduced to the idea that you could add on, a husband could choose to add on additional amounts to the Ksuva. So the Mishnah said, Imratza the Hosef Yosef, Afilu Mea Mana Yosef, person wants to add on an incredible amount of money. So a person has the right to do it. You know, it's interesting. We'll get into this more later on, Sugyas, but it's one of the interesting distinctions in many segments of the Sephardic community versus Ashkenazi community. Ashkenazi community, we do not do any kind of significant, I mean, we do a standard Tosefes. But the truth is, let's say the Chassan is exceptionally wealthy. So in Ashkenazi communities, there's nothing really that's ever actually added to the Ksuva. We use the same pro forma Ksuva. In many of the Sephardic communities, there is still the concept of Tosefes Ksuva. In fact, there was a famous Beis Din case. It's going back a number of years ago, where an Ashkenazic boy married a Sephardic girl. And at the wedding, the father of the bride encouraged the chassan to go ahead and commit to Tosefes Ksuva. So like most of us who remember very little of what the Masadik Kiddushin said to us at our wedding, because we were a little bit focused, you know, on everything else going on. So this young man went ahead and committed to $500,000 of Tosefes Ksuva. Now, of course, he's an Ashkenazic guy. So what does he have? So they got divorced, and it was an incredible Beis Din situation because, again, the Kala's family said that Kala was entitled to $500,000 in addition to whatever else. And the Chassan said, I absolutely had no idea what I was signing up for, right? In many ways, right? But, you know, and again, I just assumed the Ksuva was 200 is whatever it was. It was very interesting. Okay, I'll tell you in a couple of weeks what happened. So anyway, then, So the Gemara says like this: Im ratza lahosif, ratza lichtov la lo katani, ala ratza lahosif. So again, so the Gemara points out that the Mishnah says ratza lichtov. It doesn't say if he wants to write it; rather, it says if he wants to add it on. Misele Rabbi Ivo. So this comes to go ahead, and this supports Rabbi Ivo. Because Rabbi Ivo says. Rabbi Ivo, in the name of Rabbi Yanai, said that Tnai Ksuva, any additions to the Ksuva, have the status of the Ksuva itself. Now take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, Ratza lichtov lo katani, I tana lichtov lo hava sham inon mine shia tosefes kari Ksuva. Now, Rabbi said, what the Gemara is picking up on over here is the following, that the Mishnah doesn't say if he wanted to write her additional amounts. Now, if the Mishnah would have said he wanted to write her, writing her would have sounded like it's something additional, i.e. a matana. The fact that the Mishnah chooses to use the wording of imratza lahosif, lahosif means to add on, which indicates to us that when a man adds on to the ksuva, that add-on has the status, the same halachic status as what? As the Iker Kesuva itself. So that the add-on, so for example, let's say a husband decides to add on an additional 200 zuz for his besula wife, that additional 200 has the same status as the Iker Kesuva itself. And this, the Gemara says, is reflective of the position of Rabbi Yanai, of Rabbi Ivo, who said in the name of Rabbi Yanai, that Tnai Kesuva, any additional amount of the Kesuva, have the same status as the Kesuva itself. Rashi says, Tnai Kesuva, Tosef es Shehu Masna Lohosifla. So they said, additional amount that he agrees to add on to her. So Rabbi Ivo and Sim Rabbi Yanai says that any additional amounts of the ksuva essentially have the status of the ksuva itself. So says the Gemara. The Gemara says nafkamina. So now what's interesting is the following. So now what we understand is let's just focus right now. Forget about mazonos and all the other stuff. Let's just focus on what we call on Tosefes ksuva. So now remember, ikur ksuva for a besula is 200 zuz. Husband comes along and says, I want to add on an additional 200 zuz. Now what the Gemara is saying is based on the Mishnah, we see that that added additional 200 zuz has the status as the Iker 200 zuz, to which the Gemara says, who cares? Meaning, what does it matter at the end of the day if the 200 zuz is considered to be an add-on to the Iker Ksuva, or it's considered to be a matana? Either way, bottom line is, husband committed to pay her, and therefore he owes it to her. What's the nafkamina if it's an add-on to Iker Ksuva, or if it's a matana? To which the Gemara lists a whole bunch of nafkaminas. So number one, lemocheres. Well, so we're going to go through each of these. So mocheres u'mochelas. So the first nafkamin will be if she sells the ksuva or if she forgives the ksuva. What does this mean? Look at Rashi. L'mocheres u'mochelas. Mocheres ksuva sa u'mocheles ksuva. So if a woman sells her ksuva or she's mochel. Remember, mocheles, we had this case last week where she forgives. Remember, ksuva is a debt. So just like a creditor has the ability to forgive a debt owed to him, so the wife has the ability to forgive the debt owed to her. So if she sells her ksuva, or she's mochel her ksuva, what's the halacha? Machla u'machra es hakol, lefi shakol kari ksuva, v'lo aminon lo mikri ksuva ela manu masayim. So we'll say if a woman forgives her ksuva, or she sells her ksuva, what has she forgiven or what has she sold? Everything. Lest you think that the mechila or the mechira only applies to Iker Ksuva but not Tosefes. Therefore, the Mishnah teaches us that Tosefes has the same din as the Iker, and therefore she has whatever she sells, whatever she forgives, includes the entire amount. Next, Moredes. Now, both say each of the Nafkamina are cases that we are going to cover in the Gemara in much greater detail. So for now, we'll just kind of give a superficial understanding of these cases. So the next is Moredes. What's Moredes? Again, look at Rashi. This Namba Pirkin, we'll see later on. Ha Moredes, a by law, a woman rebels against her husband. I will say, the definition of rebellion, says the Gemara, is a woman refuses to have relations with her husband. Now, this case is going to be interesting because there could be grounds where a woman doesn't have relations without, she finds her husband repulsive or something else that happened. This is talking about a situation where ultimately, again, a woman is dafka refusing relations to punish her husband. So that's a case of Moredes. Sa Moredes Abayla Poch Sinla Miksuvasa. So we will see that there is a financial penalty levied against such a woman. Literally, her ksuva is diminished. Ad Masayu Poches Ad Kineged Ksuvasa Lotema Kineged Mana Masayim Luchudayu El Afa Tosefes Poch Sin Baholkin. So what happens? What amounts do we go ahead and penalize her with? Not just the Iker Ksuva, but the Tosefes as well. The Gemara goes on, Lipogemes, what's the case of Pogemes? Look at Rashi. So the Rashi says, Beperek HaKosef Tanan, HaPogemes Ksuva Sa, Lo Tifra Ela B'Shvua. If a woman was Pogemer Ksuva, we'll define in just a moment, she can only collect the rest of it with a Shvua, with an oath. A Pogma Tosefes, Nami, Sha'amra L'Shem Piron HaTosefes Hiskabalti Diner, Af zu pogemes ksuvasehi, v'im toin baile his kabalt, kol ksuvaseich, lo tifra al b'shua. So we'll say, pogemes is a case of the following, where a woman says, I received partial payment for my ksuva. So once a woman says, I received partial payment, now the husband claims that what? You received full payment. So we'll say that is a case of pogemes. So pogem literally means she agrees that she has received partial payment. She must take a shvua, an oath, in order to collect the rest of that ksuva. So that idea of pogemes applies if what? If either she's gone ahead and been claimed partial payment either to the ikur ksuva or to the tosefes ksuva. Next, tova'as, Rashi says, Sha'amru chachamim, ha-tova'as ksuva sa-be-bezdin. If a woman claims her ksuva in bezdin, ain la mizonos. She no longer has any mizonos. So this is talking about a situation where she is being supported by the estate. So let's say her husband died, she's getting mizonos from the estate. Once a woman claims her ksuva, her right to mizonos from the estate ends. So therefore, the Gemara is telling us over here, that concept applies to what? Not just the ikur ksuva, but tosefes. So also remember again, just keep your eye on the ball over here. We're trying to point out that now tosefes has the same status as ikur ksuva as well. So in all of these cases, whatever she does by tosefes or by ikur will trigger the same dynamic. So for example, she's being supported by the estate. If she claims either her ikur ksuva or tosefes ksuva, mizonos from the estate ends. Next, Ula Overes Aldas. I must say, these are all going to be fascinating cases we're going to get to. So Overes Aldas, Rashi says, Beperek HaMadir, Sha'amru Aleha, Teitzei Shelo B'Ksuvas. I must say, this is going to be an interesting situation. If a woman is called Overes, we'll discuss this, Overes Aldas Yisrael, or Overes Aldas Yehudis. A woman simply stops observing certain areas of halacha, which we will discuss. That is grounds for dissolution of the marriage as well. And the Mishnah says that in that case, she forfeits her ksuva. So in that case, the Rashi says, "Lo tema ksuvas mana masayim val tosefes matana ba'amuhu hefsida." So the lo hefsida. So the Gemara says, therefore, again, in the case of averes al das, where because of certain violations of halacha, that is grounds for divorce and forfeiture of the ksuva. That forfeiture applies both to the ikur ksuva as well as the tosefes. Top of nun hey, u'lishevach. I should say lishevach. So was another very interesting case. What's the case of shevach? Sha'amru. Sha'am, look at Rashi, I'm sorry. Sha'amru bebechoros, ein ha-bachar notel pishnayim b'shevach, she'shavchu nechasam la'achar misas avihen. V'lo ha'isha b'ksuvasa, v'tosef estami lo gavya mishevach, she'shavchu nechasam la'achar mizban. Well, so this is actually very interesting. The halach is that a bachar gets pishnayim, a bachar gets a double portion. Now, a bachar's double portion, that double portion amount, is determined at the moment of death. So, for example, let's say the assets of the now deceased father appreciate. A week after he dies, the Bechor, the firstborn, does not get a double portion in that new appreciation. Values are locked in, meaning the valuation of the estate for Pishnayim for double portion purposes is appraised at the time of actual death. That is true for Ksuva purposes as well, and that valuation applies both for Ikra Ksuva as well as for Tosefes Ksuva. Lishvua, what's the case of Shvua? Again, Rashi. Lishvua, l'chomili d'sheich l'shava ala Ksuva, kegon hanifrash shalom b'fanav, ve'et echer mi'ida. And so in other words, Rashi says over here, in any case where she's going to have to go ahead and take a Shvua in order to collect the Ksuva, she's also going to have to take a Shvua to collect Tosefes Ksuva as well. L'shviyis shmita. I must say, this is very interesting. Actually, very applicable. Rashi says over here, she'ain shviyis mishamet es ksuva. I will say, now here's what's fascinating. The Gemara is going to talk about this later, that there's a havamina that I would have thought that shmita would cancel out the ksuva. Now why would I think that shmita would cancel out the ksuva? Because the ksuva is a debt. Because ksuva is a debt, shmita cancels out all debts. Therefore, again, I would have thought that shmita cancels out ksuva as well. Now we know shmita does not cancel out ksuva for reasons we will discuss. But just like shmita does not cancel out ikar ksuva, it also does not cancel out what? Tosefes ksuva as well. Will a kosev kol nechasav lebanav? Similarly, again, if one writes all of his property to his sons, look at Rashi. If a person gifts away all of his property to his children, Rashi says, v'kasav li'ishto karka kol shehu, and he goes ahead and he's miyachid karka, he sets aside a particular piece of land for his wife, avda ksuvasa. We will see this later on, that lemaisa, again, what this doesn't literally mean she loses out her ksuva in its entirety, but rather it means that the lien for the ksuva is no longer against the entire estate, but rather only collectible from that one piece of property that he was miyachid. That applies to ikar ksuva as well as tosefes ksuva. Mina karka, it's only collectible from land, meaning I will say both ikar ksuva and tosefes ksuva is only collectible from real property itself. Omin ha-ziburis. And I'm going to say, interestingly enough, so even though it's collectible from real property, from real estate, it is only collectible from the inferior land. Remember, again, in general, when it comes to collection from real estate, there's ziburis, benonis, and idis. There are three different types of property. Different types of creditors have different types of lien against different grades of property. So ksuva is only collectible against ziburis, the lowest tier of his real property, and that's both for ikar ksuva as well as tosefes ksuva. And this halacha applies any time that she is in her father's home. Now, what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Kozman shehi b'vei tanan bano say kozman shehi b'vei baila b'meshach amunasa rabosai. If a woman is widowed, all the time that she remains in her husband's home, govek suvasa. It's actually very interesting halacha. She could collect her ksuva forever. Meaning, I'll say, let's say a woman is widowed and she just never chooses to get remarried, and she's living in the marital home for 30 years. And then she wakes up one day and decides, you know what, I want to start my life over, I want to get paid out my ksuva. There's no such thing as a statute of limitations on ksuva. She could collect that forever. However, Rashi points out over here, however, v'cholzman shi beveis aviha, shelo hayu ovdim osa yisomim v'lo zonin osa, gove ksuva sad chaf heishanim. V'mshaska yesra akin yom echad, machalta v'chein tosefes. So let's listen to this. But if she went back to her father's home, once she goes back to her father's home, there is a statute of limitations. The statute of limitations is 25 years. So if she remains in the marital home, so no statute of limitations on ksuva collection, but if she goes back to her father's home, 25-year statute of limitation. That statute of limitation applies to what? Applies to the ikar ksuva as well as to the tosefes. And lastly, ugaluksuvas benin dichrin. And also, when it comes to ksuvas benin dichrin, the same way that ksuvas benin dichrin, remember, again, we're experts in this now, this is the clause in which a husband agrees to give the wife's ksuva, if she predeceases him, to give her ksuva to her male children, meaning the children they have together. that applies both to Iker Ksuva as well as to Tosefes Ksuva. So Rabbi Osai, here are now the Gemara just listed all of these Nafka Mina cases, and here we see that therefore in all of these cases, Iker Ksuva is treated, Tosefes Ksuva, the add-on amounts are treated exactly like Iker Ksuva, like the primary amounts. Rabbi Osai, now the interesting part is, again, we didn't do these cases justice because we're going to Mirat Hashem see all of these cases in greater depth, but again, in all of these situations of Halacha, Tosefes is treated the same as Iker. Now the Gemara goes on and actually launches into a different discussion. So the Gemara says, Pumpadisa Amri, lo tarfa mishabadi, yarsun tanan, b'nei masi mechasya Amri, tarfa mishabadi, yaspun tanan. So we'll say now the Gemara quotes another machlokes between the yeshivas in Pumpadisa and in Masa Mechasya, two great centers of learning. So in Pumpadisa, they said, lo tarfa mishabadi. If you look at Rashi says over here, Itmar, Garas Vloga, I'm sorry, Yarsun Tinan, Enon Yarsun Kesef, Enon Yarsun Kefes Kesef Kesubaseich, Virusha Lo Tarfa Lukucho. So I will say in the statement, ultimately Rashi is quoting over here from Ksuvas Ben Endichrin. In Ksuvas Ben Endichrin, so in Pumpadisa, they said that the sons cannot go ahead and collect from Mishabadi. So we'll say, what does Mishabadi refer to? So Nechasim Mishabadi means properties that the husband sold after the date of the Ksuva. So let's say, for example, again, so husband goes ahead and says that Lamaisa, he writes the Ksuvas Ben Dichrin clause, and he says that Halacha Lamaisa, again, if you predecease me, I will give all of your Ksuva to your sons, to the sons that we have together. And let's say subsequently he sold off properties. So now wife dies, sons want to collect their mother's Ksuva. And let's say again, there's no real property left in the estate. So the shaila now is, can they go to people who bought property after the date of the Ksuva and seize that property from them in order to satisfy the debt? So in Pumpadisa, they said that the sons, lo tarfi mishibadi, cannot go and seize sold property. Why? Yar sun tanan, because Rabbi Osai, in Pumpadisa, what they used to write in the Ksuva is that the sons will inherit their mother's Ksuva. Now, Rabbi Osai, the same way that the laws of inheritance do not allow inheritors to go back and seize sold property, so too these sons may not seize sold property either. However, in B'nai Masa Mechasya, they said, but in Dichrin, the sons, Tarf Mishabadi, can seize sold properties. Why? Yasbun Tanan. Rabbi Osai, Yasbun means what? They may take. They may take, meaning in the Ksubas in Masa Mechasya, they said that in the Ksuba it was written that my sons will take my Ksuba. Take, Rashi says, a lashon of what? Is lashon of balcho, is lashon of creditor. So what's the halacha if you're a creditor? What's the chilik between a creditor and an inheritor? An inheritor cannot seize sold properties. An inheritor gets what he gets, whatever is there. But a balcho, a creditor, may absolutely seize sold properties. So this is a machlokis in Pumpadisa and Masa Mechasya. Ve'hochasa, what is the halacha? Lo tarfa mishabadi yarsun tanan. We both say halacha lemaisa, we say that ksuvas penendichrin, the sons, if their mother dies and they want to collect her ksuva, they may not take from sold properties. Rather, they can only take from whatever is present in the estate at the time that their mother died, which means, technically speaking, if their father / her husband depleted all of the property, then ein achinami, they are left with nothing. The Gemara goes weiter. Metaltali, the isnu beinayu, is another interesting case. Let's say there are metaltalin. So look at Rashi for just a moment. Metaltali, the isnu beinayu, hamiyachid metaltalin ksuvas ishto, umes. So I'll say this is a case where a man set aside metaltalin to satisfy his wife's ksuva. Meaning, you will see, you can do this. Although, technically speaking, there is a lien against all of a husband's property for the ksuva. What a husband could do is, he could lift the lien off general property and be miyachit certain properties. So he says, for example, you know, there are 5 bars of gold in the safe. Those are for you. I'm being miyachit, I'm setting aside those as the source of payment for your ksuva. That's where you get your ksuva payment from. All right. So what happens? So Rashi, Hamiyach mitaltlin ksuva sishto. A man goes ahead and sets aside particular movable property to satisfy the debt of his wife's ksuva. Umeis, and then he dies. Vehein be'en. And those 5 bars of gold are still there. Vehine fra'as mehen. Not lasan shalo b'shvua. And we will see, interestingly enough, there's another interesting halacha which says that before you take anything from nichsei yisomim, from property of orphans, you must go ahead and take a shvua, because we're very careful with the property of Yisroel. We want to make sure that nobody's going to defraud Yisroel. So before you take anything, you have to take a shvua. So what the Gemara is pointing out in this case over here, she, the widow, does not need to take a shvua. The time of my amra bana minichse Yisroel lo tifra ela b'shvua, t'chai shinon dilmatzari atbasa, v'hacha hainitzari atbasa. So we'll say, what's the concern? This is interesting. Now the Gemara is introducing us, what's fascinating about today's daf is we're being introduced to like a whole flurry of new ideas that we've never seen before that we're actually going to study more in depth later on. So now, new concept. What's the new concept? That before a woman collects her ksuva, she has to go out and take a shvua. Why? Because she is no different than any other creditor. That before they collect money from the estate of Yisomim, must take a shvua. We're protecting the interest of the Yisomim. However, what the Gemara says over here is if husband was miyachid metaltalin, he identified particular movable property for her ksuva, and though property is still in existence at the time that he dies, she is permitted to go ahead and collect that property without a shvua. Why? Because normally, why do we want the widow to take a shvua? Because we are concerned that perhaps over the course of the marriage, he had given her other property to satisfy her ksuba that perhaps the Yisomim don't know about. So in order to prevent her from double dipping in the estate, we make her take a shvua. But in a case where he actively set aside metaltolin, and what? That metaltolin is known, and that metaltolin is still in existence, there's no concern that perhaps it was miyached other metaltolin. Therefore, she is permitted to take that metaltolin without the shvua.
Whose possession are they in?
The metaltolin. In the estate's possession. Sorry. Correct. He has not sold them. Because remember, we already established before, sold property will create other problems. This is in the possession of the estate. So listen to this. However, listen to Benai. Rabbi said, let's say the gold is gone. The gold is gone. Rashi says, kigon sha'avdu. The gold is just gone. So what happens now? So what's talak? So she wants to collect her ksuva. So the shayla is what? Does she have to take a shvua before she goes out and collects? Bepumpadisa amri below shvua. In Pumpadisa, they said that she could even go out and collect without a shvua. Why not? Rashi says, below shvua. The chayvan da avadhani. Lo at pasachrini. The chon mechasav achron the ksuva v'nefras minakachos. Because what's it? We know that he set aside those 5 bars of gold. We're not choshesh that what? We're not choshesh that maybe he went ahead and set aside something else. Therefore, again, she could collect from the estate without a shvua. However, b'nei masi mechasi amri b'shvua. In masi mechasi, they said, absolutely not. She has to go ahead and take a shvua because, again, we don't know. First of all, we don't know. Maybe he gave her something else. B'ilchasa b'lo shvua. Rabbi said, halacha l'maisa will be paskin in this case. Remember, this is a very specific case. A case of where husband was miyachid, he set aside metaltolin for satisfaction of the ksuva. Those metaltolin now are now lost. Halach lemais we paskin, she is permitted to collect her ksuva from the estate without a shvua. Next case. Yichad la'ara ba'ara mitzarna. What's another interesting case? He set aside for her land, real property. This is going to be the source of her ksuva collection. And he identifies that land by demarcating all 4 boundaries. He said, I'm giving you parcel A, which has a northern boundary of this, southern boundary of this, eastern boundary, western boundary. See, he delineates all of the boundaries on all 4 sides. So the halach is when he dies, she is permitted to go in and collect that piece of property without a shvua. However, b'chad mitzra, let's say he only identified it again with 1 boundary, a boundary on one side, without delineating all of the other boundaries. So we'll say, first of all, look at Rashi. Rashi is ba'arba mitzarna, shi'ichad la'karka, the kasav la'arba mitzarim shala b'chayov, La sosa apotiki l'ksuvasa. He delineated all 4 boundaries of the land to make it again the source of payment for the ksuva. Umeis, and then he died. Nifras hemena below shvua. Devadai sulo matfis latzrayachin. Because remember again, normally we want the woman to take a shvua before she collects her ksuva from the estate. Why? What are we concerned about? We're concerned that maybe he gave her some type of metaltlin over the course of marriage in satisfaction of the ksuva amount. But in a case where he delineated a piece of property on all 4 boundaries, it's clear that what? That is going to be the source of her ksuva payment, and therefore lemaisa, when he dies, she's permitted to collect that property without shvua. However, let's say again he did not delineate all 4 boundaries of the property. What then? Bechad mitzra, bepumpadisa amri below shvua. In pumpadisa, they said she could still collect that property without shvua. B'nei masa mechasi amri b'shvua. And B'nai Masa Mechasi said, no, she requires a Shavua, because Rabbi says, since the boundaries are not fully delineated and demarcated, therefore, what is the concern? That maybe he changed his mind and gave her something else. Therefore, we don't want her to double dip on the estate, and therefore, she must take a Shavua. V'ilchasa, Rabbi says, what is the halacha? Below Shavua. Rabbi says, the halacha is that even in a case even in a situation where what? Where Lemaisa, again, where Lemaisa, he only went ahead and demarcated with one boundary, Halach Lemaisa, she can still collect that land even without a Shavua. Next case. Amar Le'edim, Kisvu V'chasmu. So what's this? Another interesting case. Let's say a man said to witnesses, write a shtar, V'chismu, and go ahead and sign on it. Vahavule, and I want you to convey a certain item to Ploni. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Amar le'idim kisvu v'chasmu ki gon matanas karka. So let's say I want to go and I want to give property to Reuven. So I tell two witnesses, listen, do me a favor, go ahead, draw up a shtar, sign on the shtar, and convey property, convey rights to Reuven. Okay. So what's that halacha? Kanumine. So let's say if the witnesses do a kinyan with me. Now look at Rashi. Rashi says over here. Kanumine, they do a kinyan with me. Lord Tsarech Imluche Bey. And this is very interesting. So the shaila in this case is, if I tell witnesses to go up and draw up a shtar and convey property to Reuven as a gift, so do they have to go ahead and check back with me before they actually convey the gift or write up the shtar to make sure that I still want this? So it's interesting, the Gemara says the following. If we did a kinyan, there is no need for them to check back with me. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, here's just to frame this case in the right way. I want to go and I want to give property to Reuven. So what happens? So I go ahead and I call over two guys. We'll call them Adim. And I say, Adim, listen, do me a favor. I want you to write up a shtar for me. I want you to sign on the shtar. And again, I remember Karko. Karko could be acquired through shtar. And then I want you to go over and give that shtar to Reuven. I must say, obviously, they're not sitting down that second they're writing up a shtar. It's going to take a little bit of time. So what happens? So the shaila now is like this. When they're getting ready to go and write the shtar, do they have to check back with me to make sure that I still want to go through this gift or not? Or do I still want to go through this gift? Or do we assume, as what Rashi calls it, that I'm omed bidiburo, that I'm still standing behind my word? So the Gemara says, it depends. What does it depend on? It depends if the Edim did a kinyan with me. If the Edim did a kinyan, and remember that kinyan is really being done on behalf of who? On behalf of Reuven, the intended recipient. If we did a kinyan, then again, the kinyan pretty much seals the deal. There is no need for them to check back with me. So the Gemara says, Amr le'idim kasu v'chasu v'havile, kanumine, if we did a kinyan, lotzarech luchebe, they do not have to come back and check back with me before they write the shtar. On the other hand, lo kanumine, what happens if we didn't do a kinyan? And now a day later they want to sit down to write the shtar. Do they have to check back with me to see if I still want to do it or not? Plus it's interesting, shayla. So, right? Okay, riveting. We're all kind of looking for him. Tough crowd. All right, so the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, I'm sorry?
Is there a time frame?
So the Gemara is always assuming a sense of immediacy. Obviously, again, if somebody's asking you to do something like convey title to property, sometimes it's being done as quickly as possible. The Gemara doesn't, and it might be a Baba Metzia discussion about maybe how long you actually have, but the Gemara over here is assuming some level of immediacy. So the Gemara says, so what happens if there was no kinyan? So the Gemara says, B'nei Masa Mechasya, excuse me, B'Pumpadisa Amri Lo Tzarech and Luchebe. Pumpadisa said, you don't have to go back and check back. And Rosa, what are they saying in Pumpadisa? Pumpadisa is saying, you know what, if I've changed my mind, the onus is on who? The onus is on me. So if I've changed my mind, I just told two guys to go ahead and write a shtar and convey ownership of property to Reuven. If I have changed my mind, the responsibility is on me to track them down. They have no responsibility to come find me. And therefore in Pumpadisa we say that we assume, unless I go and find the Edim, that I stand behind my word. This is even without the kinyan, and even halacha lemaisa, even without the kinyan, and go forward. However, again, b'nei masa mechasya, armi tzarech amluchebe. And in masa mechasya, they say what? In masa mechasya, they say, no, the witnesses have to come back and check back with me to make sure that I still best stand behind my word. I'll say, look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, over lo tzarech amluchebe, im adayin omi b'diburo, sheyich tevulo, decheven dekano mimenu, stam kinyin l'ksiva omi. I'll say, again, Rashi over here, so I want to be clear. Everyone's agreeing in what case? In the case of the kinyan. Because I also remember, in the case of where a kinyan was made, which, by the way, would be the kinyan they're discussing over is a kinyan sudar, the same type of kinyan we make for mechiras chametz. So again, so once a kinyan was made, the assumption of the transaction stands. The person is not going to go back, and the kinyan was made already. The shaila is in a situation where there was no kinyan. So apparently, again, in Pumpadisa, At Bobadisa, they said, there's no reason to assume that I am not standing behind my word. There's no reason to assume that I'm going back. And if I'm going to go back, the onus is on me to track down the Edom. Therefore, the Edom need not check back with me before they go ahead and write the Shtar and convey ownership. In Masa Mechaz, he said, listen, until there's a Kenyan that's done, I always have the right to what? To recant and to reverse and to take back the gift. I have that right. Therefore, Masa Mechaz said, Edom, you have to go back and check with the grantor of the gift prior to writing the Shtar. Say the halach is v'hilchasa, tzarechim luchebe. And the halach is like Masa Mechazia, which is in the absence of a Kenyan, witnesses must go back and check with me, the current owner of the property, before writing the gift shtar. Okay, so we'll say weiter. Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah. So we'll say Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah. Say don't say Harei Aniku ben Shivim Shana. Right, although we're in the mood a little bit. So Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah says over here. Minan, he said in the Mishnah. Minan isuin goves akol. Minan erusin besula govem asayim amon amon. So we'll say, remember, Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah said that if a husband wrote Tosefes Ksuva, that additional amount only become obligatory when? At the moment of Nisuin. But if, let's say, the marriage were to dissolve at the time of Erusin, that the husband would only be chayiv for Iker Ksuva, for the primary amount of the Ksuva, and not for the Tosefes. Says the Gemara, Itmar, Rabbi and Rabbi Nasan had a dispute. Chad Amar Halach Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So one said that Halach is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and therefore again, the husband only becomes obligated in Tosefes at the time of Nisuin, but not at the time of Erusin. The Chad Amar in Halach Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and the other opinion said that Halach does not follow Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. To which the Gemara says, Tistayim to Rabbi Nasan who Amar Halach Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So we'll say, it would appear to me that it is Rabbi Nasan who holds that the Halach was Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Why? Because again, Rabbi Nasan is on record as saying that when deciding halacha, we try to analyze the intents of the party. I will say, now, what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Basar umdina. Omeit hada'as bedavar. She'ino mefurash. Omdin bezin v'omrim. Stam inish lahachi chavin. So we'll say, umdina means that sometimes we have to gauge certain mindsets of parties involved, even though what? Those mindsets are not explicitly stated. So for example, we assume, why is it that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says that Tosefes only becomes obligatory upon Nisuin, but not upon Erusin? Because the assumption over here is what? That ultimately, again, as man is willing to go ahead and commit to Tosefes, once he has a close relationship with his wife. When does he have a close relationship with his wife? When he's lived with her, when he's had relations with her, when he has an intimate relationship with her, which is only after Nisuin. But before he knows her in an intimate way, he's willing to commit to basic Ksuva, but the assumption is he's not willing to commit to Tosefes Ksuva. That's Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Shita. Now, that's based on the mindset of the husband. So the Gemara says, it must be Rabbi Nasan who holds, like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, because we have Rabbi Nasan on record saying elsewhere that we go basar umdina, that we look at the mindset of the individuals. Where do we see that? The Amr Rabbi Nasan, halacha k'Rab Shimon Shazuri b'mesukan. The case is like Rabbi Shimon Shazuri in the case of Mesukan. Now I will say, what's the case of Mesukan? Look at Rashi. B'mesukan, last Rashi, Anun Heimud Aleph, b'mesukan, b'mesechas gin, ha'mefari shayot, say b'shar v'omr kisu l'ishti, af api shalo omr tenu. We'll see in Gin that a person's going out Bishar with a caravan on a long journey. Long journeys, by definition, carry with them an element of sakon, an element of danger. So what happens? A man makes a statement to Edom. He says, I want you to go ahead and write a get for my wife. Write a get for my wife. The Rabbi said, normally what you have to say is what? Kisvu utnu. I want you to write and to give. But he didn't say give, he just said write. So what does Rav Shimon Shazuri say? Rav Shimon Shazuri says, we give the get, why? Because we assume that was his intention. He meant to say write and give. Why didn't he say give? He was bald. He was just preoccupied with all the stuff, you know, all the stuff that was going on around him. So the Rav Shimon Shazuri says that if a man is a masukin, a man is a goseis, a man is dying, and he says, write a get for my wife, but he did not say give it. Now, listen, why would a guy say write a get for my wife when he's on his death? But remember, we learned this. Why? In order to avoid Yibum. He doesn't want to have to deal with Yibum. But he forgot to say give it to her. He just said right. So Rav Shimon Shazuri says, again, we assume there's an umdina. We know what he meant. That's what Bo said. That's what umdina means. And Bo said, you know, umdina is a very dangerous thing. Because on one hand, again, we do not like to go ahead and insert our own feeling about what people were thinking. But there are certain cases where the mindset is clear. So Rav Shimon Shazuri says, a guy's on his deathbed. He says, write again for my wife. We know, again, he's not just trying to give the sofer some extra parnasa. He means write it and give it. But he forgot to say give it because he's dying. So that's basra umdina. And furthermore, again, Ubachumas Meister, Amud Beis. Feels like Amud Hey, right? So Amud Beis. These little dapim are so tricky. You know, it looks so easy. It's never easy. So most of the Ubachumas Meister. Now this is actually Trumas Meister Shal Demai. So most of the case, let me tell you this outside. The case of Trumas Meister of Demai is like this. We know what the halacha is, that when you go out and you separate tithes, so you have to give truma to the kohen, meiser to the levi, and then the levi separates out an additional portion from his meiser called trumas meiser. So remember, the yisrael has to give to the kohen, the levi has to give to the kohen from his portion. So we'll say the case is the following. You have demai. What's demai? So demai ultimately is produce of an ama aretz. Now we'll say, now midda orais, so we assume that people take their tithes. Midrabanan, there was a concern that Ame Ha'aretz do not properly tithe, and therefore, again, we go ahead and we make, if you buy produce from an Ame Ha'aretz, you must tithe again. You must tithe the second time. So Bo says, here's the interesting case. So let's say you have Trumas Meiser that was separated of Demai produce that fell back into the produce. So Bo says, what happens if Trumas Meiser, so remember, again, I bought Demai produce, I went ahead and I separated out, let's say I'm the Levi, I separated out the Truma for the coin, and let's say again, I separated out my Trumas Meiser as well, and then what happens? The Trumas Meiser falls back into the mixture again, into the produce. Now that produce again was what? That produce now was chulin, because I separated all of my tithes. Now, oy vavoy, my Trumas Meiser falls back in. Rabbi said, what happens if Trumas Meiser falls back in? Now suddenly again, the whole mixture becomes, you still can't eat it. What do I have to do? I have to sell it to a Kohen. So you see, Elizabeth, what's the big deal? Well, it's a very big deal. Why? Because I'm going to lose money. Because Rabbi said, remember again, the assumption was that Kohanim were smart. That's not an assumption. I mean, the Kohanim are smart, of course. And the idea of the Kohen market, you were sold at a discount. Because remember, Rabbi said, again, the seller is at the mercy of the Kohen because he can't do anything else other than sell it to a Kohen. So in this case, Rabbi Osai, what do we say? So Rav Shimon Shazuri has an interesting idea. Rav Shimon Shazuri says, we go back to the original Ama Aretz from whom I bought the produce. And we ask him point blank, did you tithe your produce? And if he says yes, then what? Then it turns out again that I didn't have to tithe the produce to begin with. And therefore, again, my designation of Trumas Meiser was not the real designation. And therefore, it turns out what? That the Trumas Meiser that fell into the mixture is really okay, and the whole mixture is okay. And I will say, now this is not as good of an example, but this is another example of umdina. And I will say, this is not a real umdina case. Why? Because in this case, we're actually going back and asking the Am Ha'aretz, what did you do? But the idea is, if he says, I tithe, we absolutely believe him. So the Gemara says, therefore, Rabbi says, so again, let's keep focused. So remember, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says that a woman only gets Tosef as Ksuba when?
Nisuin.
Good. Rabbi says 50-50, right? Even Nisuin or Erisin. Nisuin. Why? Umdina. Because why? We assume that a husband does not want to commit for Tosefes Ksuva until he's living with his wife, until ultimately there's a greater connection, an intimate connection. So we'll say, so now remember, we had a machlokis, Rav and Rabbi Nassan. So one said, halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the other said, halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So Gemara says, we are assuming now that it must have been Rabbi Nassan who says that halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Why? Because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's shita is based on a umdina, and now he's just proven that what? Rabbi Nassan holds of umdina. Therefore, again, it must be Rabbi Nassan who says that the halacha follows Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. To which the Gemara says, 1 second, but Rav lo azal basar umdina. Are you telling me that Rav doesn't hold of umdina? Are you telling me that he doesn't hold the concept of umdina? That he doesn't look at the mindset of the people involved in transactions? Itmar, but listen to this. But we said, Rav says, it's another fascinating case. Matnas shchiv mera shekas b'kinah. We'll say, this is wild. Right? So, I mean, as wild as it's going to get this morning. Right? So, matna shchidera. So, let's say again, remember, we have a concept of deathbed gifts. The idea is that a person could convey ownership of an item from deathbed, and the laws of regular kinyan, regular transactional law, is thrown out the window. Meaning, normally, if I want to give this to Maishi, so if I want to give it to Maishi, again, there are kinyanim that are involved. If a person's on their deathbed, a simple utterance of saying, I want to give this item to Ploni, affects transactional reality. Let's say, so now listen to this case. So let's say a person goes ahead and writes and gives a matan as a shchimira, but the document has a kinyan in it. I'll also look at Rashi just a moment. Rashi says, matna shchimira, ino tzricha kinyan. Remember, again, normally if a person tries to convey ownership of something on their deathbed, it doesn't require a kinyan. This is something that Chazal did. Shektitnu chachamim shadvara kechsuvin chimsurim. Sho titrav daik to Allah. So we'll say this was a tova that Chazal did for a ghost. It's for a person who was dying. A person who's dying wants to know that their affairs are taken care of. If you start having to deal with kinyanim and this, that, they might get a little bit upset. Therefore, give them some level of inner quietude. We say, whatever you say, it's as if it's written in the shtar. But listen to this. Then kasav ba kinyan. But Rabbi said, let's say in the shtar itself, it's written. That what? That this shtar has the power of a kinyan. So now Rabbi said, I have an interesting situation. Because on one hand, you have a matna shchimira, but the matna shchimira is employing normative kinyanim. So the shayla is, what's the status of this gift? Is this a matna shchimira, or is this a gift that is regulated by the normative laws of kinyanim? So we'll say bebe rav mishmei derav amri. So we'll say in the house of Rav they said the following: arkeve atrei rachshi. Such a gift rides on two horses. Such a gift rides on two horses. Now we'll say, now we're going to say that's another way of saying that this gift has the benefits of a matna shchimira and the benefits of a regular transaction with a kinyan. We'll discuss what that means in just a moment. So, Shmuel amar lo yidana ma'idun be. So, and Shmuel says, I have no idea what to do with this case. Right? I don't know how to judge it. So, the Gemara analyzes this. So, bevei rav mishmei derav amri ar kivei atrei rakshi. What does it mean? When they said that this, in the yeshiva of Rav, in the house of Rav, they said that this transaction rides on two horses. What does that mean? That this transaction has the benefit of a matnas bari, a regular gift, and the gift of a shchimira. How so? Hari hi kematnas bari di'im amad eino yachal achzer bo. There is one caveat with a matnas shchimira. What's the one caveat of a matnas shchimira? That if somebody gifts something from their deathbed, and then Baruch Hashem, the next day they have a miraculous recovery, then what? The gift is voided. So Rav will say like this: when you go ahead and you gift something, both through the mechanism of Shchimira, but also through the mechanism of Kinyan, so therefore, again, it rides on two horses. How so? Number one, that it has the status of a Matnas Bari, which is even if the sick person, the Shchimira, recovers, the gift is not voided. The gift still stands. Furthermore, Hari had commands by the Amar in Yachal Achzerbo, Hari Kimatna Shchivmira, Sheim Amar Hava Asil Ploni, Hava Asil Ploni. But it has status of Matna Shchivmira, that's what? That Rabbo say you can convey items just simply through words, by mouth, through words, without the actual kinyan. So Rabbo say again, so therefore, if you structure this gift both using formal kinyanim as well as matna shchimira, the transaction has the benefit of both. So it has the status of a matnas bari, that if you recover, the gift itself is not voided, it still stands. But Lamai says it's like a matna shchimira that you could convey ownership. Now, I will say, the case of Hava Asli Ploni means that if Ruvain is the shchimira and Ruvain is owed money, Ruvain could convey the interest in that debt to Shimon by simply saying what? The debt is now collectible by Shimon. That's all he has to say. So on one hand, it has the properties of matnas shchimira. You could convey it by mouth, but it has the qualities of matnas bari that even if you recover, the gift still stands. This is being done with Edom. Correct. Ushmuel and Shmuel says, Lo yadana ma idun bay. So Shmuel says, I don't know what to do with this. You know why? Shema lo gamar lakim ro. So ela bishtar. So Shmuel says, I don't really know what to do with this because maybe his intent was only to go ahead and allow the gift to be valid through a shtar. And remember again, shtar is not effective achar misa. Rabbi said, you cannot be kona something from someone through a shtar la achar misa. So Shmuel says, I just don't know what to do with it. I don't know, does he mean it to be a matna shchimira? Does he mean it to be... So the fundamental machlokes in Rav and Shmuel is, Rav seems to feel it could actually be both. It could be matna sbari and matna shchimira. Shmuel seems to feel it can't be both. It's got to be either or, and I just don't know which one he wants. Rabbi said, tap of nun vav. Ella, so we'll say, so what do you see now? So remember again, let's go back. We're trying to figure out Machlokis Rav and Rabbi Nosson. One opinion said that Allah follows Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that Tosefis Ksuva is only collectible upon Nisuin, and one said it's not true. And Allah does follow Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So we'll say, we tried to say that it's Rabbi Nassan who holds that Allah follows Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Why? Because Rabbi Nassan holds of Umdina, therefore Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds of Umdina. But now what have we just proven? We've just proven that what? That Rav also holds of Umdina. Rabbi said, remember again, that's the case over here. The Matna Shchimira that also included a Kenyan is a case of where the grantor wants to go at, we assume that what he means to do when he does both, Matna Shchimira Alpeh and the Kenyan, is what does he want to do? He wants to give the beneficiary of this gift the koach of a Matna Shchimira, but also the koach of a Kenyan. That's Basar Umdina. So what do you see now? Both Rav and Rabbi Nassan both hold of Umdina. Well, if that's the case, you've got a big problem. Because I will say one of them holds that the halacha does follow Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. If Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is all about Umdina, then both Rav and Rabbi Nassan should both hold the halacha. If Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is all about Umdina, and now we've just proven that both Rav and Rabbi Nassan both hold of Umdina, then what? Then both should say the halacha follows Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Ella, see the Gemara says, Ella, let's just do a few more lines. Ella, tarvaihu azli basar Umdina. But rather, Rabbi Elazar, both Rabbi Nassan and Rav hold of Umdina. So what's the machlokes? Man damar halacha shapir. So we'll say the one who holds that halacha follows Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, he's true to his shita of Basar Umdina. Man damar ein halacha. So man damar ein halacha. Nami omdin daitohu mishum de ikruvi daitohu. V'ha ikruva la daite. So also the other man will say no, that we hold like Umdina also. They will say, why does a man write Tosefes Ksuva? Why does a man write Tosefes Ksuva in his Ksuva? Right? Why does he do it? What's the logic? The logic is because he wants his wife to know how much he loves her. Right? He wants to say, because again, remember, by going and committing, by actively committing himself to additional monies, he wants them to become closer. He wants her to see how much she means to him. And mission accomplished. That's accomplished even Rabbi Elazar. That's accomplished even in Erisin when he writes it. You don't have to wait for Nisuin for that to be accomplished. So I will say, what comes out of here is halacha lemaisa like this. Both Rab and Rabbi Nassan agree, but we go basar umdina, but the machlokes in whether or not halacha follows Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is like this. Everyone agrees that the whole point of the additional amounts is because to create a close between husband and wife. So the one who holds halacha follows Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says that closeness is only established, only achieved when? Yeah. Nisuin. Once they consummate their relationship, then there's a closeness. Whereas the other man says, that's not true. The closeness is achieved as soon as she sees that he has written these additional amounts in the ksuva, even what? Even before they go ahead and consummate their relationship. Therefore, again, that other man will say that, no, those additional amounts become binding even when? Even Erisin. I'll say just a little bit weiter. So the Gemara says, Yasir, Rav Chanina, Kameid, Rav Yanai. The Kamar, let's just finish this. The Kamar, Lach, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So we'll say, Rav Chanina, Sapapar, Rav Yanai, and say, Rav Elazar ben Azariah. So listen to this, Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Yanai said, "Amarle puk kray karech libra." Get that out of here. Right? In other words, that is absolutely not true. The halacha does not follow Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So the Gemara says, because he said, Rabbi Yanai said, "Ein alach Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah." Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Avdim mishum Rabbeinu. So Rav Yitzchak bar Avdim said, "Name Rabbeinu halacha Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah." That the halacha indeed follows halacha. Sorry, get a little excited. The halacha indeed follows Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel halacha Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Similarly, again, Rav Nachman said, "Name Shmuel." That the halacha follows Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rav Nachman didei Amar ein halacha Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. But Rav Nachman himself felt that the halacha does not follow Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Unahardoi mishmedu Rav Nachman Amar halacha Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. The nahardoi sitting Rav Nachman that the halacha follows Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Va'af agav delat Rav Nachman va'amar kol daine didei Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Hachi v'hachi tahavi. Even though Rabbi Nachman said he cursed anyone who passed like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that any judge who paskins halacha like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, so and so should happen to him. Afilu hachi halacha Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. V'halacha lemaisa. And Rabbi say, what is the halacha? Ki Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi say, bottom line, halacha lemaisa is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and the Tosefes amounts will not kick in until when? Until ultimately Nisuin. Again, just so you should know, this is like a pretty like significant dafyomi milestone. To start on Amud Beis of one daf and end off on Amud Aleph. I don't want to brag, but I'm just saying it's...
Do you want me to put 9 to 11 on me?
Please, thank you.